starts to wind up, throws, and Luke jumps back to take a ball inside and low for ball one. One ball call. Winding up again, pitches, and Appling hits an easy bounder right back at Root, who gets it, throws to first, and Appling is out for the first out in the eighth inning. One out in the eighth inning for the White Sox, and Jackie Hayes is at bat. Winds up and throws, and Jackie swings it a high fly out into center field, and Galan racing in makes the catch for the second out. He had to go pretty well over toward right center to make that catch on the run. And it's two out in the eighth inning with Jimmy Dykes now at bat. Root gets the sign, starts to wind up, throws, and Dykes swings and misses a curveball for strike one. One strike on Jim. One strike to count, but you're ready out there once more. Takes the time, gets the sign, starts to wind up, throws, and it's a wide one across the waist for a ball, making it one strike on Dykes. And there's a strike over the heart of the plate, waste time, making it one and two. One ball and two strikes on Jim. One and two the count. And the hitter swings the next one. The hitter slow bounded on the third baseline. Hack comes in, makes a one-handed pickup, throws the first, and as Cavaretta dug the ball up in front of the runner, Jimmy almost knocked him over, and he beats it out for a base hit. Dykes is on first base, two out in the eighth inning, and Sewell is at bat. He takes the first one for a ball, and Root walks back onto the mound again. And the hitter hits the next one, a drive in the center field, but Galan is waiting for it out there, has it. And it's three out, ending the eighth inning with no runs, one hit, and one man left on base for the White Sox. And at the end of the eighth inning, the White Sox are leading the Cubs by a score of 11-2. Stanton's out there now, getting ready to pitch the ninth inning, which should be the last half inning, judging the way things are going and the way he's been going, which is in good shape. Down here, one of the doctors got to get in touch with some of the office department. Here's Stanley Hackett bat to start the ninth inning for the Cubs. Stratton stands there getting his sign. Throws, and it's a strike over the heart of the plate, about knee high. One strike on Hack. And there's a ball inside and low. So the count is one ball and one strike on Stan. One and one the count. And he swings again, a foul one into the stand to the left of the plate. One ball and two strikes on Hack. One and two the count. Stratton winding up, throws again, and Hack takes a high one wide for ball two. And it makes it two balls and two strikes on Stratton. Two and two is the count. Thank you.
And the hitter hits the next one and bounded back over the pitcher's head. It goes through into center field for a base hit. Single to center field by Hack, putting him on first base to open the ninth inning and bringing Ken O'Day, who has taken over the catching chores. Then Tartlett gave way to a pinch runner in the seventh. Ken O'Day at bat. Stratton Reddy throws the first one, and O'Day takes the curve ball inside and low for ball one. One ball called. Throws the next one, and Ken swings it. A bounder down to Hayes to get to throws to second base. Appling throw to first. It's too late to get the runner there. And Hack is forced at second to play, going Hayes to Appling for the first out in the ninth inning, leaving O'Day on first base with one out. And Johnny Gill is at bat. Gill up there at the plate. Yell at bat, but you're ready out there again. And the hitter swings the foul this one into the stand above and to the left of the plate. And it's one strike. One strike on Gill. But you're ready out there once more. Throws, and Johnny fouls this one back onto the net back of the plate. Strikes for the count with the pitcher waiting out there again. Finally swings around to get his sign, throws, and it's a ball that gets away from Sewell, bounds out to the right, but not far enough to let the runner advance. And so it's one and two still, strike. O'Day is on first base with one out of the ninth inning for the Cubs. White Sox leading 11-2. Finally has his sign again, takes another look at first, and throws. And the hitter hits the ball hard into right field for a base hit. O'Day makes the turn at second, keeps right on for third. Hoss gets the ball and throws it in to second base. Single to right field by Gill. His second hit of the game. Moving O'Day to third. And bringing Bill Jurgis to bat. Jurgis up there at the plate. Here gets the line foul into the spot seat down just beyond the Cub dugout back at first base. Apparently everybody got out of the way of it before that ball went in there like a bullet. And it's one strike. And a hitter hits the next one, a drive in the center field for a good clean base hit. One run is in, and Gill keeps right on and pulls up at third base. Single to center field by Jurgis, and currently Charlie Grimm is going to bat now in place of Charlie Root. Jurgis single to center, scores O'Day. Becomes third run of the game, making it 11-3. And Grimm is getting a hand from the fans as he walks out of the dugout. Some fans were letting their rabidness, getting a little bit the better of their sporting spirit, are uttering a few boos. No need for such a thing. Grimm is up there batting now in place of Charlie Root. Cub runners on first and third. And he hits the first one, an easy bounder back at Stratton, who gets it, throws hard to second base, and the throw to first. It's a double play, and the game is over. Benora comes running in, throwing the ball into the air, and tearing for the bench, and it's a double play. The play going from Stratton to Appling, to Benora for the second and third out, ending the ninth inning, and the Sox win 11-2. In the ninth, Cubs had one run, three hits, one man left on base. And the total for the ball game, White Sox had 11 runs, nine hits, no errors. We have, let's see, one, two, three, nine men left on the bases. The Cubs had three runs. Let's see, they had two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, 10 hits and four errors with six men left on the bases. The time of the game, an hour and 58 minutes. The winning pitcher was Stratton, and the losing pitcher was Warnicki. The totals again, giving the White Sox a 2-0 lead in the City Series. White Sox had 11 runs, 9 hits, no errors, with 9 men left on the bases. Cubs had 3 runs, 10 hits, 4 errors, and 6 men left on the bases. Time of the game, 1 hour and 58 minutes. The winning pitcher was Stratton. The losing pitcher, Warnicke. Tomorrow, the same two teams play here at Comiskey Park. Also on Sunday, in the third and fourth games of the City Series. We won't be on the air with it tomorrow, will we, George? Because it seems that we got a little football to do out to that good old Northwestern. You'll be comforting my old pal Dick Hanley, and in the next booth I'll be bearing down on one of our other stations. So, I mean, we'll have a lot of fun out there. But that concludes this broadcast. Tom DeMolnar is a little bit late today, but he got his whistle in just in time to get on the air. So, the final score today, 11-3. That means that the White Sox have won 2 games in a row, and tomorrow they're going to try to make it 3. Well, the Cubs have really got to come back tomorrow and do something. Fourth game on Sunday. We will be with you then, won't we? Okay, games at 2 o'clock tomorrow and Sunday, but that's all for now. So Al Cotton is speaking for George, old Uncle George and his pipe here, trying to bid you good afternoon from Comiskey Park and return to the studio. Bye now.
WCFL in Chicago. Men, you'll save money by... Al Cotton presents... First and ever rest to eat cereals presents... Al Cotton. When you eat a bowl of Kellogg's cornflakes, millions of other people are also enjoying them. The Kellogg Company of Battle Creek, Michigan... By only the best of ingredients. Their products are manufactured in the spick and span plant, and they're packed in the big, bright red and green packages with the patented inner wax pipe wrapper. Made fresh and kept fresh. Kellogg's Corn Flakes have that Kellogg flavor, which has been famous since 1906, the year that the original Corn Flakes were introduced. They're toasted to a crispness that lasts. Try Kellogg's Corn Flakes for breakfast tomorrow. They are especially good with some preserved fruit or honey. And they're fine for that after-school lunch for the children. But when you go to your grocer's, always be sure. Never say cornflakes. Say Kellogg. And now, here's Hal Cotton.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Well, tonight's the night the American Leaguers say, I told you so. All you American League fans get busy and chortle. Because... It was an American League day all the way down the line. Them there Yankees evened up the series with the Giants, and if there was any doubt about their evening it up, well, the score was 18-4. Of course, the last 6 of those 8 runs were made in the 9th inning, but they were made. The Yankees had 18 runs, 17 hits, and no errors. For the Giants, 4 runs, 5 hits, and 1 error. The batteries for the Yankees, Gomez and Dickey. For the Giants, Schumacher, Smith, Kaufman, Gabler, Gumbert, and Mancuso. Here in Chicago, the White Sox made it to 2 straight over the Cubs, winning also very decisively 11-3. The White Sox had 11 runs, 9 hits, no errors. The Cubs, 3 runs, 10 hits, and 4 errors. The batteries for the White Sox, Stratton and Sewell. For the Cubs, Warnicke, Henshaw, Bryant, Root, and Hartnett for Day. I don't know just what to say about those things, and yet, I guess I do. That Yankee game down there in New York, when the Yankee power really started to turn down the heat, more or less, we should say, emphasize the fact that the Giants are really, in this series, one Carl Hopper. It's pretty hard to say at any time that a ball club is no stronger than any one man. But if Schumacher can't do it, and Smith couldn't stop them, then I don't know what they can expect in a case like this. For the simple reason that now Hubbell has almost certainly got to come back tomorrow. There's a good chance he won't, that's true. There's a good chance somebody else, and he's a pretty good... But if Fitzsimmons pitches tomorrow, great chat to where these Yankees turned on the heat today, he might very easily lose. Then, Hubbell comes back with a full 3-day rest, and they can't very well use him again in the series. If Hubble tomorrow, with 2 full days of rest, and here sometimes in a very down situation like this, you can do that, and although you'll find Hubble and others even doing it through the season, then if Fitzsimmons might come back and do it, somebody else, maybe Schumacher, and between the two of them win one game, then Hubble gets another crack at him after 2 more days rest, and they might be back in there. You can't ever tell. So it looks as though it's on Hubble's shoulders and practically no one else's. Here in Chicago, the collapse of the Cubs' defense has been probably even more startling than the collapse of the Cubs' much-heralded pitching staff. Because the pitching staff certainly hasn't held up, and yet, in yesterday's game in which Lee lost, the defense collapsed to start him on his way, and in today, the very first inning, the defense collapsed, and then the big 8-run sixth inning, the defense was also very poor. The Cubs coming up with 4 errors today, 2 in that inning, to make it just too bad. And in the first inning, it did. But when those White Sox hitters started to take cracks at Warnke in the sixth inning, there was known as two of the most dangerous hitting teams in the American League, find this National League pitching not so very difficult after all. Although, as I said, this is to be seen in the composite box scores of the 2 games played. Yankee composite box score first. You find the Yankees as a team hitting .329 in 2 games, while the Giants as a team are hitting only .231. The strange part of it is, these fellows and health fellows who have made hits in 8 with 3 hits, and is hitting .364 and 9 hitting .444. Ott with 2 hits and 6 trips is .333. Mancuso with 2 hits and 5 trips is .400. And Jackson is the only regular under .300, and he has 1 hit and 8 times at bat with .125. I mean by that the only regular who has made a hit. Hubble himself has a batting average of .500 with his 2 hits and 4 times at bat. And Davison, there's a pinch hitter today, made a hit to have a batting average of 1,000. But Moore has been held hitless in 10 times at bat. Lieber in 4, Ripple in 2, and Whitehead in 7. Now, compare that to the fact that the Yankees find only one man who is engaged in either of these 2 games that hasn't made at least 1 hit. And that is Charlie Ruffing, the pitcher who pitched the opening game of the series and was shut out in 3 times at bat. In fact, he struck out 2 of those 3 times. So everybody in the lineup, including Gomez, the pitcher today, has had something to do in the batting line. Now, when you have the hitting running all the way up and down the line that way, it's pretty tough. The most sensational showing at bat so far in the World Series is Jake Powell, a fellow who really wasn't figured so seriously at the start. As a matter of fact, some people weren't sure that he would be regularly in there, although it was practically certain. But Powell, a boy who came from Washington in the deal for Ben Chapman this year, is hitting .714, just a mere .714. He's made 5 hits and 7 times at bat and has gained a couple of walks. Other sensational averages, Rolfe has 3 hits and 7 times at bat, and Frank and Joe have 4 in 9 times at bat. Other fellows are all below .300. And that leads me to say another thing. 2 of the biggest guns of the Yankee attack have been held below .300. And they're not going to stay there, at least one of them. So in other words, they've won this one game to even it up without the really serious services of Lou Gehrig, who has made 2 hits and 8 times at bat, and Dickey, who has made 2 and 9 times at bat, that they're almost bound to get before the series is over. The big shot today, of course, was Lazzeri, whose lone hit of the series, giving him an average of .143, happened to be a home run with the bases full, which is a lot of home runs in any league. Gomez came up with a base hit, and so he's very happy tonight. The White Sox-Cubs series, we find not quite as striking a situation, but still bad enough. The White Sox are hitting .231 as a team, with Appling topping the list, or rather tied with Rosenthal at the top of the list, with 4 hits and 8 times at bat. Each of them has a 2-base hit. Dykes is 3rd with 2 hits and 6 times at bat, with .333 average, and all the rest of them under .300. Stratton, the pitcher, made a hit today to have an average of 250. Tenora has one hit in six trips with 167. Radcliffe one hit in seven trips with 143. And Hayes and Sewell each have one hit in eight times at bat with 125. So, their hitting hasn't been overpowering, but the Cubs' pitching has been so bad, and their defense so bad, their five errors in two games and 12 passes in two games, making it, or giving the Sox an opportunity which they haven't overlooked. The Cubs' batting average is only 209 as a team, which is not very good. The Giants, incidentally, are hitting 231 as a team, which ties the present White Sox. The leader of the Cubs is Woody English, who has made one hit in his only appearance for a perfect average. But of those who have been in the game, in both games, Gill, making four hits and eight times at bat, has an average of 500. Hack, with two hits and six trips, has 333. Hartnett, with two hits and seven trips, 286. Cavaretta, with two hits and eight trips, 250. And then on down, Demery has only one hit and seven tries. Golan and Jurgis, one and eight. And the rest of them haven't hit. So you find the same weakness in the Cub team that the Giants are showing, and the same strength in the Sox team that the Yanks are showing, and that is that everybody put in here has had something to do. Only two of the White Sox players haven't made at least one hit. Haas, who has been up six times, and Kennedy, the pitcher, who was up four times yesterday. Whereas, of the Cubs, Herman, Warnke, Lillard, O'Day, Grimm, Lee, and Carlton, who have been at bat anywhere from one to five times, haven't made a base hit. Before we go any farther, I do want to remind you of one thing. And that is, remember what we said last night. The baseball player who won the Kellogg's Most Valuable Player contest will be announced Monday night, the winner of the player winning the Pontiac sedan. And then, if possible, Monday night, or if they haven't been able to figure through all the letters by that time, at least within the next two or three days after Monday, the main prize winners of the fans who wrote in will be announced. And also, every single person who voted in the contest is going to receive by mail a complete list of all the prize winners. If you know how many thousand that involved, it would give you a big kick. The scoring today started in the very first inning here at Comiskey Park. Radcliffe, the leadoff man for the Sox, walked and went to second on Rosenthal's single. Haas laid down a bunt toward third base, and Warnke went over there and got it with plenty of time to get Radcliffe at third base. He'd have had him by 8 feet, but he had one of those things happen like Cavaretta did yesterday and threw the ball clear down to the canvas down the left field line, with the result that both Radcliffe and Rosenthal were able to score, and Haas reached third. Warnke looked like himself in striking out Tenora and making Appling hit a ball toward Herman, but it was hit a little to Billy's right, rather hard hit, and caromed off Herman's glove for a scratch double, putting Haas across the plate. The Cubs got one of those back in the second inning with one out when Hack walked, went to second on Hartnett's scratch hit, and scored on Gill's single. The big blow-up, however, came in the sixth inning, and after pitching great ball, allowing only one hit after the first inning, and that coming in the fifth, why, Warnke really was tagged, and tagged plenty. Benora opened the inning with a resounding single to center. Appling single to right, putting Benora on second. Hayes sacrificed the boys along. Dykes was purposely passed, filling the bases. Sewell single to center, as he so often does in a clinch, scoring Benora and Appling. The third, and then when the throw-in got away from Hack, Stratton went to second. After he'd won a play which might a hard hit ball play, ball got away from Cavaretta. He tried to throw to Phil at first, but still get another run with the hot horses. New pitcher came in, and then Appling singled to draw to end that big run. One in the eighth when second time, an English down. English set, opened with a single, but was forced to rather by O'Day, who was in there. O'Day went to third on Gill's single and scored on Jurgis' hit. That's all, though, and tomorrow they play the third game of the series. But, Fort, you got something to say?
Well, you know, people often say the way to jollity and value is to look for the... We invite you to invite us. That's just things. That's a patented feature that makes it keep going outside parking. Just a zip of your thumb and press door up past the lid. Inside, nothing to protect the flavor and freshness of the thing. The wax tights are found only on Kellogg products. Open that. Then notice how uniform those delicious toasted for how perfect each one is. How wonderfully fresh and good they smell. Think perhaps, but they mean careful manufacturing and harsh. The next time you buy a corn cake, get Kellogg's and discover. Kellogg presents Hal Totten with his inside story on baseball each day at this time except Sunday. The National Broadcasting Company, WENR, the voice of service in Chicago. At this time, we leave the air in favor of WLS.